Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr. But first, book news, and the Costa Book of the Year has been announced. So last time I think we talked about the category winners, and they've now announced the overall winner. And the drum roll, the prize goes to The Mermaid of Black Conch by Monique Roffey.
So this is the one that's set, I think, in Jamaica, and a mermaid comes to shore, or a fisherman finds a mermaid and kind of starts this story off. So it's not actually available in Australia, which is really frustrating.
Right.
I think it will be now probably brought in through one of our UK distributors. But
yes,
I haven't been able to get my hands on a copy, which is annoying.
So we have to wait.
We do. Okay. We do. Very patiently, I'm sure.
Well, let us know if you have been reading that, because I'm on the fence still.
It doesn't sound like your kind of book necessarily.
Well, I'm more intrigued now that it's won the Costa, because as we talked about, a lot of the Costa winners are some of my favourite good reads.
And I mean, they're meant to be really accessible and enjoyable reads,
aren't they? Reads. So let me know if you can, if you'd like to persuade me. So that is news. And Annie had some other news.
So The Barefoot Investor, his book has now sold the most copies out of any book all time of record keeping in Australia. It's just hit 1.42 million print copies since it was published in 2016. So that's in 5 years.
That's amazing.
It's huge. So it's outsold. The record was previously held by 50 Shades of Grey. So I think this is a much more savoury winner and homegrown as well, which is
more
amazing.
It's more constructive.
So that's really exciting. And then I've got some top 10 bestsellers if we'd like to hear about what's selling.
Yes, I do.
In January in Australia. So in the top 10, at number 10, we have The Dictionary of Lost Words, homegrown Pip Williams.
Yes.
Selling the socks off that book. Then we have The Survivors by Jane Harper. So her fourth crime novel.
I must read that.
It's really fun. Yeah, if you've got some holiday time coming up, just take that away with you.
Yeah.
Then at number 8, we have The Barefoot Investor. So it's still in the top 10 of the weekly sales,
which is
incredible.
Yeah.
And has been, I think it had a whole year straight at number 1 and then has dropped down to number 8. So, you know. Then we have Neighbours by Danielle Steele. We have The Happiest Man on Earth by Eddie Jaku.
Yes.
We have Bluey and Friends. We have The Easiest Air Fryer Book Ever.
Oh my gosh, air fryers are everywhere.
Yeah, they really are.
I've had so many friends buying air. It doesn't appeal to me.
It is like a really quick and easy way to get dinner on the table. Is what I don't really understand.
I don't understand.
It's not for me. That's
so funny.
I think with the advent of the Jane Harper movie, The Dry is back in at number 3. Then we've got Bluey the Pool at number 2. And at the top, The Fast 800 Easy. So everyone's
doing a New Year's resolution book.
And Michael Mosley always sells well. So
amazing.
That's our fun little snapshot.
So we're very up to date now. Now on to our book of the week, The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr. And this came onto my radar when I think Simon Savage read it and said that it was his book of the year in early days, 2021. And he thinks one of his favourite books of all time. So that's a very big call. And then a lot of other people I've been seeing it in my feed of lots of other people reading it and or, you know, raving about it. And so it's just been published in January this year. So I just thought we should get on the bandwagon, really. Mm-hmm. So Robert Jones Jr. is an American author. He was born and raised in New York City and he did an MFA at Brooklyn College. He's also the person behind Son of Baldwin, which is on social media, I think Instagram and perhaps Twitter. And it's a social justice collective
movement, I guess.
And he does cite James Baldwin as an influence, and he dedicates the book to both Father Baldwin and Mother Morrison, which is a reference to Toni Morrison. So certainly he's paying homage to them, I think, and they have influenced his writing. And he's been profiled recently in the New York Times, among other publications, as one of the black male writers of our time. And this is his debut novel, The Prophets. So He says it's the black queer love story that he longed to read when he was growing up. And it's interesting, there was an observation that James Baldwin made, and this was cited in the New York Times article, that America's attitudes to sexuality are linked to its ideals of hypermasculinity and racialized violence. And that was James Baldwin's essay, Here Be Dragons. And that has influenced Robert Jones Jr. And he talks about how when he was growing up, he read all the stories from the African diaspora and he couldn't find any same-sex attraction stories amongst it. So it's not just the case of growing up gay and not seeing yourself represented in literature, but in his case, he noticed there was also a racialized element to it. And when he read the James Baldwin essay, that was the first time he sort of saw that recognized and felt this relief that it wasn't just his imagination, that there were other forces at play, and he wanted to write it. And it was the old thing of, if there's a story, I think Toni Morrison said, if there's a story you want to read and you can't find it, then you have to write it. So that was the genesis of him writing the book. And The Prophets is a love story centering around Samuel and Isaiah, who are slaves on a cotton plantation in Mississippi. And there is a real sense of place there. You know, that the humidity,
it's very lush.
The lush vegetation and the hardships, of course. And so they're the focus of the story, but you get the perspectives of each of the characters who are on the plantation. So some of the other characters are Amos, who almost becomes a guru or a godlike figure. He fills in a gap, I suppose, of religion that for some of the slaves who are looking for meaning or looking for someone to be a guide, a leader for them, and that has consequences. And then other characters, including some of the, well, Ruth, for example, who's the wife of the owner of the plantation. And so you do get different perspectives, but it's really focused on Samuel and Isaiah and really a forbidden love and the consequences. How does that play out? And in fact, does it put the, you know, their friends in danger? Yeah, so that's one of the driving forces of the story, but it's more about the characters, I think.
Yeah.
He's been compared with Toni Morrison and James Baldwin, which I mentioned, I think, were influences on him, but that's a high praise. And I think,
That in the writing.
You can actually see it there. It's a New York Times bestseller already. It's had rave reviews, by including from Ocean Vuong, whose book we read, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
It's just been getting a lot of hype.
Yes, it's been getting, so there have been rave reviews and it's also had a lot of hype, as I mentioned, and we're predicting some awards shortlists, I think, Annie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so it came onto my radar because as part of the buying group that my bookshop is in, they've decided to kind of pick like Waterstones do, like a book of the year, and really support it and kind of release it with a beautiful jacket and kind of a special edition for books that they think are going to be really special. And this is the first of that lot.
Right.
So that's why it's in a really beautiful hardcover out here in Australia.
Because we often don't get the hardcovers.
No. Yeah, so it's really well priced for a hardcover book, and with this beautiful jacket that it's got on it. So that's kind of how it came to my attention. And then, of course, we got proofs early so that we could try and read it and push it once it did come out.
Yeah.
So
But which you didn't do.
I'm often lazy with my proofs because they're always staring at me, and then book comes out in the world and that's the impetus that I have to read it.
I know.
That is silly. I should read more beforehand. But
so it has been an instant New York Times bestseller and it sounds like that's part of the...
I think they're really trying to make it something important.
Important.
And I think,
book.
As you say, it fills a gap in black American writing, but black writing in general perhaps, where gay characters aren't necessarily seen in happy relationships, you know. Like, I think of the two books that we've just read and been talking about, of Memorial and Real Life, where, I mean, they're much more contemporary books, obviously, and the men aren't in the same circumstances, but those relationships are much more strained than this one, where Isaiah and Samuel seem to have this really pure connection and love. They've grown up together, they've fallen really naturally into this relationship, and if they were in another time and another place, they would just be allowed to live their best life. And because they are slaves on a plantation. They're really not. But I think that's the core at the heart of the book for me, is that that kind of stolen joy, and that's what's so illicit, is that, you know, the plantation owners and white people in general in this world want to stamp out any kind of personality or any kind of individuality, and that these two men have just found
personhood.
Yeah, even. Exactly. And yeah. And they've found their own pocket of a place to be with each other, and they have a real connection. So I think that's the strength of the book for me. The writing is amazing. I think it is the kind of book that isn't as much about the plot as it is about how it's told, and all of those voices kind of coming together and building up into this frenzy almost, or into a storm. You know, you get lots of the women's perspectives from the different people who work on the farm and who are slaves on the farm, and you also then get the kind of seven ancestors' voices coming through, of the more spiritual or more, I guess, connection back to home and to country, and that's incredible too. So I think the way that that's expressed, which is really poetic and lush, as you say, and with a lot of colour and vibrancy, it's almost more about the experience of being in those bodies at that time rather than actually what happens to them.
Yes.
And not that he shies away from the violence that happens and the kind of terrible things that are happening to them, but I think it's much more, it gives them a humanity that I think a lot of books about this era either can't or don't. So yeah, I think I really enjoyed that. I do think it is a bit overly long, and I think that because you jump from character to character to character, you don't necessarily get into any of those stories. But yeah, so I'm enjoying the read, but it is a hard read, and yeah, the language, I'm just kind of letting it wash over me rather than taking in every word and every sentence. And there probably is a lot to be analysed there. I think he's thought a lot about how he's constructed his characters. But yeah, what do you think?
Yes, I think so. Well, I think we were a bit ambitious because we said last Friday, yes, we'll do the prophets, and then went into a four-day weekend. And so I bought it on Tuesday afternoon and I have not finished it yet. Yeah. So as always, I'm very happy to talk about a book even if I haven't finished it, because you still have a sense of it. But yeah, it is one that I would like to do it justice and finish and really reflect on. I think it's a book you have to sit with for a while. But I certainly have got far enough into it to have a real sense of it. And I can see, I've never... This is a bit embarrassing. I haven't read James Baldwin before, I don't think. Have you?
I've read essays, but not his other longer works.
So I must do that, and I have been meaning to. I've read Toni Morrison's Beloved, and which was outstanding, five-star read. And I can get the sense of the influence of Toni Morrison, and I can take it from what others have said that there's the James Baldwin, which is high praise, and the writing, I think the standard is incredible for a debut. It's so assured, it's so, the rhythm is really strong, and it's poetic. If anything, I found it sometimes so stylized that I wanted to cut away from that a little bit and just pare it back a bit to the story. But on the other hand, you couldn't complain because it's so beautifully done. So it is certainly a step above so many books that we read in terms of the quality of the writing. So I've been enjoying it, but in a different way to, say, Memorial, which we did last week, or some of the other books that I've read recently, which are more immediately accessible, because it is a slower book. So it's a slower read, and you have to settle into it. And so so that's part of the reason I think I haven't finished it yet. So I've been wanting more story, but that's sort of been holding me back. I would like it to really get going and more action. Mm-hmm. But I think, as you say, because you go from character to character, each time a chapter begins with a new character. So we have Ruth, Samuel, Essie,
Maggie,
Amos,
Pua,
Maggie. Yep. And so you get into that character and their observations before the story can move forward. Mm-hmm. So that might be partly why it feels slower. Mm. But I love the characters. So he's got such compassion for each one of them, and you empathise with each of them, even though some are not immediately sympathetic. You get inside their heads and you see what drives them, and they're all quite distinct. And, you know, the way he does the dialogue, he's very very judicious with how much dialogue he will use, and they do feel very true. And I love, as you say, the gay love story, which is directly told, but it's still nuanced and sensitive and just feels very natural. Mm. And it gives you an insight into how natural these stories are, but also why they have been hidden and because of the attitudes. So you get a real sense of how that would have played out for so many people in the sort of situation that Samuel and Asai are in. I'm enjoying it, but not flying through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the same. I think, again, like when I read The Underground Railroad, it feels like I'm not quite the right audience, that I don't have enough American history, enough kind of civil rights history to fully appreciate the nuances that are going on here. I think for me, trying to immerse myself in that world, there's a bit of a remove. I keep making comparisons to our own colonial histories and our own horrible things that we have been part of here in Australia. And that's what I think is resonating with me. So I agree with you. I'm definitely getting into the characters. And I think it's really interesting that he does that. He moves from character to character without necessarily changing voice. Yeah. Like the tone of the book is kind of that same propulsive.
Cohesive.
Yeah, exactly. I think it almost feels like a chorus, you know, kind of pushing this book along, and they are focusing in on one person's perspective, but it's the same narrator, or it's the same voice propelling you through the story. So yeah, I'm really loving that. I do want to know what happens, but I think, yeah, as I said, it's not necessarily a book about what happens. It's more about highlighting these two men. Now that we don't have to race through it, I think hopefully I'll be able to wallow in it a little bit more and kind of soak it up, because I think there is so much description, especially of the plantation and of the light and of the colours that he sees, and that seems to be really important. I don't know if there's a symbolism there or whether that will come to bear.
I think, for example, all of the characters have biblical names, which again is another level. You can get more out of the book, understanding all of that, for example.
Yeah, it does feel very spiritual there's that kind of religious overtone, but there's also a lot, like the use of his language is almost like he's pushing together a kind of antebellum South English, American English, and a modern day Black English, like Black American English.
Yeah.
You know, people use finna and woke and language that is very culturally specific to a time and a place now. And I think he's saying something there about the way that these people are using the language of their oppressors, taking that language and making it their own so that they can have a tiny little pocket of individuality again.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it is about resilience and strength and making your way, surviving in this world that is actively hostile to you and doesn't even think you're a person, let alone imagine that you might have thoughts and feelings and desires.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, there's a lot in it.
There really is. And I think it's maybe not a book group kind of book, but one that you would definitely want to finish and talk about with a friend and think a lot about.
Well, I will keep reading.
Me too.
We'd love to know what you think if you've read The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr. So please do email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts, because we're still digesting this one, or indeed reading it.
Yes, we might have to do a comeback and see what we thought of it at the end.
Yes, a follow-up episode. And so that was The Prophets, and next week we are reading The Burning by Megha Majumdar. So, and she's coming to Adelaide Writers Week, so that's exciting.
Yep.
And that is also, I just noticed, on the last week we did Memorial by Brian Washington, which has been nominated for the Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence. The Burning has also been nominated.
Wow.
And that is being announced on the 8th of February.
Ooh, so very timely.
We're very timely at the moment. So that should be good.
Great.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. And you can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.